Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Everybody, we are live here at HockeyRoyalty.com doing a live show for the LA Kings. Joe and I have done a couple for the Rain, getting the first one down for the Kings here. We got a full house here today, a newcomer to the Hockey Royalty fam, Kiffin. How you doing, my man?
Doing good. Enjoying doing everything so far, enjoying the writing. You know, it's kind of an obsession of mine. So to do it in a more enjoyable way is nice.
It looks like you're wearing that outdoor jersey. Who are you sporting on the back?
Nobody. I mean, it was on sale, so I mean, you don't get to choose. But I'll probably put somebody on there. Maybe Byfield, or depending on how he does, maybe Jersey.
Nice. And Joe, welcome. Welcome in, man. How you doing?
Always doing well. Always a pleasure to chat with you, Randon. How's things going for you on this Tuesday evening?
It's going good. You know, I went did the Lord of the Rings trilogy in the last couple days. Extended edition, so a nice solid 12 hours of watching when all my prep work for the podcast this week, and then getting ready for the blizzard. We're supposed to be getting snow here up in Dallas, weather down to 15 degrees. Yeah, so it's going to be pretty crazy. I know that's nothing for you up there. You're probably wish that's shorts weather. But
when they say snow in Dallas, what does that mean? What are you prepping for? How many are you getting?
Well, last year there was 6 inches of snow in Dallas, and like the whole city shut down, like pipes were bursting, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know what this storm is supposed to be like, but we're going to see there as far as that goes. And then our fourth guy is Russell. He's looks like he's dealing with some technical difficulties. He will be back. All our fans listening right now, feel free to get in the chat, ask some questions, comments, whatever. We always like the fan participation. Let's start it off quick here, boys. Let's start with our first one. Impressions of the rookies, right? We've had several rookies come into the fold this season, whether it be from one game or multiple games. We'll start it off with Kiffin. Who's been your favorite rookie so far?
Like I said in the open right there, Jersey, without question. You know, from the moment he got called up, he was playing well. He skates well. He sees the ice. One thing that I really enjoy about him is watching him on the power play. I mean, he's not afraid to shoot. He really reads the ice well. A lot of the time, I don't get to go to games living in Texas, but you know, a lot of the shots of him when he's on TV, he's looking up, he's looking around, he's paying attention to what's going on. I mean, it's, you know, that trade, the Muzzin trade, was so painful for Kings fans. You know, it was hard to see Muzz go, but to get Jersey in return and really watch him kind of blossom on the blue line and watch him, you know, hopefully bring some life back into the power play has been awesome. I think Byfield could overtake him as rookie of the year. I mean, seeing him finally put one in the net was nice, but it's got to be Jersey for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic, and I would agree with you that was mine as well. And I think a lot of things that's underrated is right now is that the shooting percentage for the Kings while he is on the ice is 9%. So he's one of the top five on the team in that. He's creating offensive chances not only with his skating but with his shooting. Joe, what have you seen from Jersey? And is he your player? Or do you got something new to bring to the fold?
No, he is mine. He is mine because and Randon, we talked about him before the season started. I did the player preview on him for the Rain. Really excited about what he could bring to the table. So I'm just pumped that he got his shot and he's taken it and he's excelled. He's been awesome. The only other so I agree full marks on all of it right now. And I would say this speaks to how well he was in Ontario. He's still second among defensemen in assists in Ontario, only to Jordan Spence, who's been on an absolute tear lately. So Dursey's been so good all season. I'm really happy to see him get that shot. The only other name I'll throw out there, and it may be a little bit of a surprise, is Kaliev, because he may not be the Kaliev that we expected, right? Being this top six forward, which I know I was hoping he'd get more of a look at the start of the season and scoring all these goals. He's playing a nightly role on a line that's been very productive for the Kings, whether it's productive just from an overall game standpoint, but also they're chipping in offensively. I think this has been a really good year for him in terms of getting his feet wet and learning the NHL game. So I'm going to throw Kaliev's name in the hat as well, but it's hard not to just love what Dursey's done.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. And to catch you up there, Russell, we have two votes for Dursey as the most impressive rookie. He just bounced back out. So I don't know what his computer's doing, but I really liked what you said about Kaliev and him adding a defensive ability to his game. And all that kind of stuff like that. So, you know, you definitely have some people who have loved what Dursey has brought, you know, and he's been the afterthought of that trade from Muzzin. You know, a lot of people were really excited about the first round pick, and Grundstrom we got to see a lot earlier. And so it's been nice to finally get some due and some offensibility from that blue line. So let's take this question here from Richard, and then we'll go on to the next topic. Richard says, how happy are you with this road trip? What things should the Kings work on in practice during the All-Star break? Joe, go ahead and take that one.
Well, it's hard not to be impressive with this road trip. They're getting points all over the place. They've got some big wins. The toughest thing is going to just let's not have a letdown against a team in Detroit that you probably should beat, but it's the last game of the trip right before a break. You know, it's going to be – that's one that you want to try to find a way to get points. And I think that's the biggest thing is the Kings have found a way to get points in tough buildings on a tough road trip. So I'm very happy with the road trip. And as far as what they need to work on, I don't think I'm going to, you know, be breaking any news that the special teams has not been very good, right? So that's something that needs to improve. Listen, the coaches, they know that, and whether it's something they need to work on, whether it's something they need to tweak personnel, you know, hey, that's – I guess we'll see what they come out of the break with. But I think it's obviously special teams. It's the biggest hindrance right now to the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah. Technical difficulties there from Russell. We'll see if we can get that figured out. Let's move it on. New addition's been advertised, right? So we brought in quite a few players over here on free agency, including Edler, Arvidsson, and Deneau, and you know, much maligned through some people in the hockey world that, you know, Deneau is in a second-line center. Arvidsson's past his prime with his shooting, and Edler is not going to be able to hold up to the rigors of being there all the time. And they've produced quite well this year. Joe, what have you seen from the additions, and maybe who's been the most effective?
I would say I was pleasantly surprised with Edler. I did not have high expectations for him, but he played really well. It's really, I feel for the fact that he's down and got, you know, had that injury. So that's too bad. For me, Sean Dursey, Phil Deneau has been so impressive. He talk about as advertised, it is a guy that just dominates the possession game. He's a great possession player. His defensive, his two-way game. He's such an important defensive piece. And I think it has taken some of the load off of Andrei Kopitar, but he's also contributed offensively too. I mean, Deneau's not just this guy that is such a good defensive player that doesn't contribute much going forward. He's been very good. And for me, the most kind of as advertised, most impressed, the guys that I've been most happy with has been Phil Deneau. I think he's filled that second line center slot perfectly for me.
What do you think, Kevin?
So I'd like to start with no offense to Dave Poyle, but clearly Rob Blake fleeced him on that Arvidsson trade. I mean, it's Arvidsson has been fantastic for the team. As far as the new guys, I mean, Alex Edler, going back to 2011, 2012, back in the days with the rivalry with Vancouver, I mean, I was not a big Alex Edler fan, but as that died down, you know, started to watch him. I thought he was great. He played really, really well for us. You know, he really held the line. Dano has been amazing. I remember, when we signed him, I sent my buddy a text. I said, "Oh my God, we got Dano. We did it. You know, I mean, he's 54.8% in the dot. You know, he's absolutely a great faceoff player. I mean, you're not going to win 100% of your faceoffs, but the big thing that gets me about Dano is his plus minus. Like the Kings have, as of right now, they've got a plus four goal differential, but Dano is still a plus 14. You know, to be that high on a team that is kind of even on scoring, it's just incredible. It's incredible. And I just like to mention real quickly, because they are newcomers and so is Trevor Moore in a way, the Mad line overall has like combined for like 73 points since, you know, this year. And obviously not all of them have been playing together, but I mean, like, they're that's incredible. What chemistry.
Mad line, huh?
Oh, what's, yeah, the name? I mean, we got to name them silly things. I mean, don't forget that 70s line was a thing in LA. I mean,
Russell, right. Which new addition has been the greatest for you? I know they've both mentioned Dano as probably their number one. Maybe you could speak on how you've seen at the stadium an Arvidsson and what he's brought to the team that maybe as the season's got on, he's gotten progressively better.
Yeah, he has gotten progressively better. It seems like anywhere he's on the ice and anytime he has the puck, he's going to shoot it. So it doesn't matter if he's on the other his own blue line, he'll throw it on net. But yeah, he's looked good. Unfortunately, he's been kind of in and out of the lineup throughout the first half. But now that we've seen him consistently playing alongside Dano and Moore on that second line, there's a lot to like right there. I mean, Arvidsson is putting up some of the best analytical numbers of his career. The only thing that's kind of holding him back right now is the shooting percentage, but you're starting to see a little bit more of those pucks start going into the net with off of the stick playing with Dano. So hopefully that continues going forward.
Yeah, I think I think Dano has been the stabilizing force within the second line. I know we were getting fleeced quite a bit last year with Filardi up there and the Corsi numbers. I know you're a big stat guy, not generating a lot of chances, and the Kings have the third most shots per game average. Hopefully that starts to equate to more goals, and we'll get to that later on in the offensive things. But those three players, all three hits, in my opinion, as far as signing them in, whether it be for the one-year deal as an Edler or a guy that's going to be a staple of our team going forward. And it looks like he was very underutilized in Montreal and in Dano. So something great there. Let's go to a couple questions before we move on. Let's start right here from Ryan Walters. What would you guys say to trying to pick up Chychrun both to boost the blue line and the power play? I think we're all pro that.
Yeah, if our chats are indicative, then we definitely are. We actually published an article today about Ben Chiarot and the sort of steadiness that he could bring to the blue line. I think Chychrun could really open up the power play and kind of give us more options. You know, I talked about Durzi and the way that he sees the ice, the way that he quarterbacks that power play to maybe run a second line with Doughty and Chychrun on the blue line, and you know, keep maybe Kempe and Durzi on the top line. I think would probably lead to more shooting chances, because I think that's where we're suffering most of the time. It's just taking shots.
I'm all in on Chychrun. Or at least the idea of that type of defenseman. He's under term. Good cap hit. So I know there's, I'm not in on Chiarot. Like, if they're going to do it, if the Kings are going to go get that guy on the left side, go get the guy like an impact guy like a Chychrun. And I don't care, like, obviously within some reason, but I know there's concern of like, well, Chiarot would come cheaper. Yeah, well, you're going to have to pay at some point to get this guy. So I'm in on Chychrun. I hope they are able to find a way to make it happen. I don't know if it'll be this season, maybe an off season thing, but Chychrun or somebody of the like, I'm in on.
So let's go to another question here. We got, do you expect Filardi to see any time with the big team this year? Russell, you want to take this one?
Yeah, right now it's kind of hard to see. I mean, they're kind of trying him out in the wing. He's always been a center coming up throughout his time in juniors and then in a short stint with the Kings, but now he's playing the wing. He's been looking pretty good there with anybody he's really playing with. So if we can see a little bit more, I think the thing that with Vilardi, there was always some kind of question with his effort on the ice. You kind of just noticed it whenever you saw him playing. I mean, you know the skill and talent is there. You're just kind of waiting for it to exude on the ice, and we just really haven't seen that happen. I mean, we've seen it happen in flashes, but hasn't been consistent. And unfortunately, it was looking pretty good at the start of the season with Anderson and Kachev on that line. We all know how much I love Vladimir Kachev, and who knows what he would have brought if he was staying with scoring. But it's been just another disappointing kind of start to the year for Vilardi. But now we're starting to see him thrive in the AHL and be that goal scorer that we thought he could be playing on the wing. So hopefully that continues.
Yeah, the thing is, has been where are you going to put him? I know you're going to have to make some moves. Somebody's going to have to get sacrificed. And Joe and I have talked about it on the Making It Rain podcast. Maybe they trade away to open up a spot, you know, trade away a guy with a 1-year contract, whether it's Elias Anderson or Athanasiu or Grunstrom, who's an RFA, trade him away to open up a spot to make room for a Vilardi or one of those players who are scoring in for the Rain. Kiffin, what were you going to say before I jumped in there?
I'll be honest. I don't know that I see it. I don't know that I see the roster spot for Vilardi. He's got a good shot. He's got good legs. But, I mean, there's something to be said about fitting into the system. And, you know, one of the ways the teams win is to fit in, is to have guys who not just buy in, but they can actually play it. I just don't see Vilardi thriving under Todd McLellan. That's my biggest issue with him. I think he's a great player. I love watching him with the Rain. But I don't think that he can play that kind of hockey.
I kind of think I agree with both Russ and Kiffin, but just because right now, I don't think there is a spot for him. That said, I think there can be a spot for him. I think I'm of the belief that they actually don't need to go acquire, or at least spend a lot, I should say, to acquire a forward, because I think Vilardi can be that. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about the preseason where his line kind of ripped it up a bit, right? With Elias Anderson and Kachev, they had a great preseason. But if you look at their numbers, they were getting hemmed in, and I know it's a short, small sample, but they were not good possession wise. They ended up scoring goals, and I guess at the end of the day, that's what it's there for. But they were not a very good line. It was a little bit of a little bit misleading. So it wasn't a shock to see him struggle as a center in the NHL. I think he's proven he's not a center in the NHL. He's been great on the wing in Ontario, and the second he got sent down, I said let him get as many games as he needs to be. In Ontario, he has the potential to be an impact top six winger for the Kings, potentially this season. And I think he's a guy that they could bring up as that kind of trade acquisition, if you will, if they decide to do that. To Kiffin's point, right now, there really isn't a spot for him. But that's okay. Let him continue to marinate and get that figured out. And then if spots open up around the deadline, he can come up then.
Yeah, I think you're looking at that spot there, and what he's got is that shot, right? He's got over a 10% shooting percentage in almost every single year that he's been a pro, and he's been fantastic in the power play in that dot area, and it's something that we need on the Kings. It's just the where do you put him? Who do you send down? And then, you know, how much loyalty are they going to give to Brown? Right, Brown, as West Coast Hockey here says, you know, only has one point on the power play this year. How much loyalty are they going to give to him? I mean, he's done everything that you've asked for him to be a King for the rest of his career. But at one point, you know, we're in a shot to win and be in the playoffs. Do they need to start make some adjustments in order to be more productive? So that's something that we need to definitely look at. And the Olympic break is, or what it consists of, the Olympic break is going to be their chance to try some of that out in practice. Let's switch up to the next topic here. The goalie tandem. So obviously Quick has been better than advertised, stepped in the middle part of the season. Cal's been now coming on. I think he's 3-0 in his last couple starts. He's over 60% at quality start effectiveness. And so what do we think of this goalie tandem? Is it what you thought coming into the season? And where do you think it kind of shakes out as we get to the stretch there? Russell, you want to start on this one?
Yeah, it's been a lot more surprising than we thought it would be coming into the season, that's for sure. I mean, I guess everybody thought it would be Cal Peterson taking the throne, but obviously it's been Jonathan Quick that's been the number one goalie throughout the first half of the season. So, I mean, coming out of the break, though, that shortened or COVID holiday break, whatever they wanted to call it, Coming out of the break, Cal Peterson was looking pretty good, and he's been looking pretty good the last couple of games. So if that is able to continue, I mean, you're looking at one of the better goaltending tandems in the Pacific Division. I mean, Vegas only has really one guy. They're kind of shuffling people in and out, and Anaheim's got John Gibson and no one else. So, I mean, who else do you have to really fight with up there? So, I mean, look at Edmonton's goalie issues right now. So
they have negative two goalies.
Yeah, exactly. They have nobody. So, but yeah, if that can continue going forward throughout the end of the season, then yeah, it's looking pretty good for the Kings.
What do you think there, Joe?
Yeah, as Russ kind of alluded to, I was way off with this. I fully expected Cal Peterson to kind of take this and run with it, and it hasn't happened. And a lot of that's in credit to Jonathan Quick. But part of it was Peterson struggled during the early part of the year. But I found something that was a little bit interesting. I thought last season what really was a big deal for Calvin Peterson was when he was at 5-on-5, he was one of the best goalies in the league at high danger save percentage. This year, despite his struggles, right, he's had a little bit of an up and down season. He is top six, I believe, as I'm looking at this from hockey, from Money Puck, excuse me, top six in high danger save percentage. So he's still one of the top goalies in the league in high danger save percentage. Where he's struggling right now, ironically, is the low danger or slash medium danger save percentage. So, you know, take those numbers for, you know, I know everybody has their different opinions on some of the analytics and stuff like that. But if you were to bet on a guy to improve, I like the chances of the guy that's making the saves, the tough saves. And I think he'll make the saves he's supposed to make, those quote unquote low danger saves as we go forward. So I'm still in on Cal Peterson. I think he can be the guy, but I think it's good right now that he's got Jonathan Quick playing as well as he has, because it's allowed him to kind of work through some of the issues that he may be has had.
Kiffin, what do you think about that? What's been said so far?
So I pretty much agree. I mean, I'm one of those people who's kind of living with concern. I mean, I like Cal. I think he's one of the things that I see the most about Cal is that he's got good fundamentals. And Jim Fox mentions it probably 7 to 8 times every broadcast. But, you know, he stays in the crease the right way. And, you know, he makes sure that he does everything exactly the way that a goalie should at the end of the day. You know, one of the things that I see the most that is troubling to me is that Cal has problems when the Kings are on the penalty kill. Very few games are you going to play. Are you not going to play shorthanded? And he seems to lose track of the puck during the penalty kill. It's something that I've seen game in and game out. He just kind of, you know, good passing gets the puck away from him. But having Quick having such a resurgence season and really starting a competition between the two as to who's going to take the limelight, and eventually on the off chance that the Kings make it to the playoffs, who's really going to make those starts? It's going to be good for him. He seems to have taken a mindset of competition, and it's only going to drive him up. My one stat that I found, which was interesting, was his scoring chance save percentage this year is the highest it's been in his full professional seasons. It's at 0.895. So he is improving. The numbers are there. They show that he's improving. It's just, you know, for this year, I'm a little worried about him. But I think he really is the heir apparent. He's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they move as the season goes on. You've seen Quick get back-to-back starts. You've seen Cal get back-to-back starts, even with Quick playing well. I think, you know, T-Mac is definitely trying to find a rhythm there. And who knows what it's going to be with all the protocols and stuff this season down the stretch. If a goalie needs to make 3 starts in a row, you know, getting them accustomed to doing that kind of thing. But I think Russell said that we are in the best situation in the Pacific. And if it comes down to a stretch, you never know with having your starting goalie come out, you know, what that'll do in the point standing. So let's flip it over to a question here from Jordan Reyes. Do you guys think the Kings will go in on Philip Forsberg in free agency?
No.
Anybody can take this one.
I hope so. I've always been a big Forsberg fan. The tough part is with free agency, you just are going to tend to probably hate that contract in a few years. It's just the nature of the business, because guys don't become unrestricted free agents until their late 20s, you know, mid to late 20s, probably 27 years old or so. So to sign a guy to a 7-year deal, you're signing him into his mid 30s. So you just run that risk of, is it worth it in the back half of the deal? But I love the idea of Phil Forsberg. I think he's an outstanding forward, and talk about a guy that could fit exactly what the Kings are needing on that first line wings position, because, you know, they've juggled that around a lot this season. Fortunately for the Kings, Kempe has had a huge breakout year, but I really like the idea of Phil Forsberg.
He's a bona fide star. There's no question about that. I think where we run into is cap space. I mean, yeah. You know, you talk about holding on to somebody for a long time. I mean, he's going to be the guy who demands the good money, and he's earned it. But, you know, I don't see us fitting him in the cap space. I think it's a waste of good space that we're going to need to sign good players down the road that we've drafted. We got to look to our system before we look outside. Outside buffers what you have, and we did that with Victor Arvidsson and Phil Deneau.
Let's go. Let's get another question in here. Let's see. We had one more before we moved on. Oh, I guess not. All right. Let's go over here. Better than expected. So, you know, based on what we had last season and what we knew of the players and the contracts and everything like that, obviously there were some expectations on where we thought the team would be and where we thought certain players would be. Which player for you has risen above that and is playing better than expected for you this year? Kiffin, you want to start this one off?
Yeah, and I'm probably going to be in the minority here, but Brandon Lemieux, I've loved every moment that he's been on the ice. One of the things that we lost as the 2012 and 2014 teams started to dissipate, get traded, you know, traded and not re-signed, was that kind of grit, that mentality of I'm here to be a part of the team, to defend the team, do what I have to do. And I mean, Lemieux has just been fantastic. He's not putting up great numbers scoring wise. You know, but his possession numbers are good. He's not afraid to get into the gritty areas. And, man, whatever he puts in Lizotte's water that makes Blake Lizotte follow people around with the puck is just fantastic. So, yeah, I would say really that whole line, honestly. We talked about it earlier, just that whole that whole energy line that we have is that they're all performing way above expected. And I wasn't very hot on Lizotte when he signed, so.
I think to harness your point in there, he's third on the team right now in Corsi 4 at 58.7%. And, you know, their whole drive and everything, adding that physical element, I think that's a great pick. What do you think, Joe? Who's playing better than what you thought this season?
Adrian Kempe. I did not have very high expectations for him. I think you know that. I wrote a piece in the right before the season that I thought that he – listen, I thought he had a role. I didn't think he was a player that was not a good NHL player, not a good fit for the Kings. Like, I didn't see him as a top six winger. I didn't think he could finish enough. His shooting percentage historically, even dating back to his younger years, wasn't anything that was something that you saw him spike, like even mid-teens percentages. So I wasn't sure if the expectation should be that he will do that. I was wrong. Adrian Kempe has been awesome. I'm now in on Adrian Kempe. I also wrote a piece maybe a month or so ago that said, you know what? This isn't fake. This is real. Like, what he's doing is legit. So I'm in on Kempe now. He's made me a believer. Full marks to him. He is taking the reins on that first line left wing with Kopitar. He's playing first unit on the power play. And he's earned it, and I think he's doing a heck of a job with it. So for me, from my expectations, I thought he was more of that third line middle, like great third line player, solid maybe middle six, but more of a defensive side, if you will. And he's turned into a legitimate top six first line winger. And so for me, it's Kempe.
Go ahead, Russell. What do you got?
Yeah, actually, my pick was going to be Brendan Lemieux. So you're not in the minority there, Kiffin. But since you took him too, and I unfortunately missed the rookie pod segment, I'll pick Sean Durzi. I mean, it just kind of came out of nowhere, right? I mean, when we were talking about the defensive prospects with the Kings, I mean, Sean Durzi, I don't want to say he was more of an afterthought, but he wasn't top of the list, I mean, among the players that Kings had coming up. So the fact that he's been able to put up the type of numbers that he's putting up, he's currently third among all rookie defensemen in points per game, and it's actually the highest points per game total since Lubomir Vyshnovsky in 2000-2001. So he's putting up some pretty good numbers for a rookie in the short time that he's been playing. So it's been great to see, and it's been really surprising to see. And you got to love it from a Kings point of view.
Yeah, I think Durzi's been fantastic, and Lemieux's been adding something to this team. And I'm glad to be right about one player in Kempe. So, you know, Joe owes me a steak dinner whenever we meet or whatever.
I think
West Coast Bias is, for me, has got his honorable mentions, my guy within Trevor Moore. I thought I was going to be right with him. I thought I was going to be right with him in the beginning of the year. He was playing, for lack of a better word, like garbage, in my opinion. I just didn't really notice him on the ice. And maybe he was doing a lot of the small stuff that T-Mac likes to, you know, to keep him getting playing time. But now you're starting to see the points and the skill arrive. And I don't know if that's just the Deneau factor, because it doesn't matter seeing who plays with Deneau, their points go up. So maybe it's just, you know, who are you playing with and everything like that. But I really have enjoyed it. I know that both Ryan and Russell got to go on All the King's Men, and, you know, they busted out the stats there that he has been has the most points in a month since Andre Kopitar. So it was at over 15 in a month. He's the next player to do it or something like that. So definitely somebody who is coming on. And I really like his game and the fact that he's adapting it to whatever line he's playing on and what it needs. And it's not like he's changing it completely, but, you know, if you really need a lot of checking and all this kind of stuff like that, he does that. If you need somebody to finish right now on the second line, he's doing that. He's really just kind of, you know, giving exactly what the line needs, no matter where he's slotted. And he's somebody you could see play anywhere from the second to fourth line, you know, as pieces come up and go down. Cause like, he's, you know, he's got another year on his contract. So I really appreciated what he's brought to the table. Absolutely. So let's take another question here. See, what are your thoughts on Kupari being a scratch for so many games? I think he's a good winger for Byfield and should get a look. Anybody want to take this one?
I'll take this one. I've always wanted Rasmus Kupari. I've always envisioned him to be a winger with the Kings. I mean, you just look at the centers and the way that he plays the game of hockey. He's a speed skater. I mean, he needs open space, open ice, and he's always good going up the wings. And he's just – I just don't envision him being a center with the Kings. And I think in the few games that we've seen him play on the wing with the Kings, he's looked pretty good. And in the games that he had to play on the center, he's looked kind of mediocre. It's been unfortunate to kind of watch Rasmus Kupari. I was expecting more out of him this year. I was expecting him to be the next rookie to be in line to jump up and make a step this year and crack the lineup full time. But we really haven't seen that, unfortunately, the last couple games. So it's been, I don't want to say disappointing, but you just been unfortunate to see him sit in the press box because the Kings have been winning so many games without him. So what do you do with him? Do you send him back down to the Ontario, maybe before the Calder Cup final, see if maybe you get some time down there? I would say that's probably the case, the best case for him right now.
I'm going to ask Russell a question because he's always in the press boxes there. Do you think he's the person that T-Mac was alluding to, that you can show, you know, the horse where water is, but you can't force him to drink? And you know, referring to like he shows all these flashes, but he can't put it together consistently.
I think that's exactly the player that he was talking about. He's not talking about Alex Turcotte. Alex Turcotte's, what, fourth, fifth game in the NHL? It's not Sammy Fagamo, though. I think that was his first. So, yeah. I mean, let's see, what other rookie? It's just got to eliminate all of them and it's pick the right one that's left. So, unfortunately, it's Rasmus Kupari, and that's why we've been seeing him in the press box a lot more.
I think it's a little interesting. It almost worked out as a negative for him in a weird way, the whole Byfield injury situation, right? Because Byfield was going to be 3C on this team probably. And then after that, it was going to be Vilardi for a cup of coffee before they said, okay, this isn't working. We're going back down. So next in line was Kupari. When I think if all things being equal, I think they would have preferred Kupari play on the wing. And they really kind of forced him into being a center just because the other guys due to injury and Vilardi's play that, you know, next man up to play center on the third line was Kupari. So I think that's kind of, in a way, hurt him through no maybe fault of anybody's. Because I agree with you, Russ. I think he's a winger. I think he can excel as a winger. Maybe he does need to go down to Ontario and play as a winger. But, you know, if you're paying attention to the Kings, there's, I don't know, how many forwards are in Ontario right now, Randon? 27? So there's not a whole lot of room down there either to find playing time. So,
I mean, you have Burke, who's been playing on the first line, two scratches. Kachev's been scratched, you know, so right. Like, and he's like fourth on the team in assists. Like, that team is deep down there. So,
has anybody remembered TJ Tynan?
Right. Russ is right, though. I think Kupari's a winger.
I just look at Kupari and like his skill set reminds me a little bit of the way Adrian Kempe skates and how he utilizes his speed coming from the outside and breaking it in. And you see sometimes when Kupari gets around guys, you're like, oh man, that look at that blazer, that sturdiness and everything like that. But then he's afraid to take it to the hole. You got to just go and you just got to bring it to the net and try to, you know, score goals on your own and get a rebound or get that long shot and hope the guy behind you is following up. And we see that so many times from this year from Kempe where, you know, he gets around this guy and he's just one-on-one with the goalie and just has to pick a corner you know, I believe Kupari has that kind of skill in his skating to do those things from the wing. Is it the confidence there, or is he just deferring to his line mates? I'm not 100% sure. We heard that back in previously in Kempe's career that he was deferring to his line mates to make plays, and he was just kind of out there playing and not kind of grabbing the reins. And, you know, I believe Kupari has that kind of skating skill in him to complete those styles of plays from the wing on the outside coming in. He was my pick earlier on the year for the round table for the Kings to be the best rookie of this season. Just because I believe that he had decent numbers in the dot, but I liked his skating. So it's something interesting to be seen in how he goes in. Maybe a tune-up game when they get back off the road in Ontario might be something to send him down, get a tune-up game coming back in. But the team's winning. It's kind of hard to mix things up at that end. Yeah. Let's go into needs improvement. So there's been a couple players, you know, with either hype or just the team in general with some aspects, you know, getting a lot of these new scores in, how lines are supposed to work and all those kind of things, but maybe haven't met expectations. Kiffin, why don't you start us off on this one? Maybe where is somebody lacking, and what do you see from his game that maybe shows you promise that he might be able to fix it?
So, I mean, Kupari is definitely one of them. My pick again, I'm just here to stir up controversy in the comment section. The guy that I'm really disappointed with this year is Anze Kopitar, but I will use the caveat there that it's not entirely his fault. Kopitar has been deployed consistently over the years as a guy who is 25 years old, and it takes a toll on the body. You know, he, for as much time as he's on the ice, he's just not producing. He went, what, like a month between goals, I think. You know, yeah, he leads the team in points, but he's also a brilliant playmaker. But I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing the urgency. One of the things that you see the most from Kopitar is the strong puck possession in the, you know, down in the deep areas in the zone. And I'm just not seeing it this year. And it's what we've come to expect. And I think because of that expectation, when he falters and he's not playing very well, it really, really shows. I'd like to see Kopitar used less, maybe deploy him on just the even strength lines and maybe like the secondary power play for a while, just to give him a little bit of a break. But yeah, I want better out of Kobe.
The Kings fans right there. We'll see if that we get some comments coming in there. Joe, what are you thinking?
So I was worried about being hot take-ish. I did go with Kopitar, so I may not have to worry about that. And it's a little bit different. Like I my expectations weren't necessarily, and then I want to put the caveat that he's still a very young player, but is Tobias Bjornfort a steady every game NHL player right now on the left side? I don't know. He's not winning me over to the point where it's like he needs to be in the lineup. And I don't think he's winning the Kings over in the sense that they're very actively, at least it would seem, looking for a left shot defenseman. He's been in the league. I know he's so young, and I want to be very careful with this because I acknowledge that he's a young player, but I was hoping to see a bigger step this season. I kind of made the point earlier in the summer that I wanted Cale Clegg to make the team over him, frankly. But I understood why Bjornfoot made the team. I don't know. I don't know that I'm seeing, like, from a possession standpoint, he's barely average. There's never going to be like a ton of offense to his game, which is fine. Like Matt Roy isn't an offensive defenseman, but he excels at the rest of the game. And I'm not seeing it from Tobias Bjornfoot. I don't know what he is right now. So is he a two left shot or a lefty two? I don't think he's that. Is he a lefty three? Maybe. Right now he's lefty two. And I know it's partly because Edler got hurt, but for me, I'm still waiting for Bjornfoot to take that next step. And so that's what I'm looking for. And so for me, the player is Tobias Bjornfoot.
Go ahead, Russell.
Yeah, I think you guys kind of relate a little bit of your answer to mine a little bit. It's just we're not disappointed in the play. We just are expecting a little bit more out of it. I mean, with Kopitar, he's a little bit faulty. It seems like the defensive game and the penalty kill is kind of faltering a little bit, special teams especially, but he's playing pretty well 5-on-5 hockey. But yeah, that could go. Bjornfoot, we really don't know what he is. He's playing quiet minutes really right now. He's you're not really noticing him, which is a good thing from a defensive sure. point of view, but you maybe expect a little bit more. And for my player, I'm expecting a little bit more out of Dustin Brown. Right now, he's getting power play 1 minute, and it's just not working for him. He's one of the lowest on the team in with the amount of minutes he's getting. So besides Philip Deneau, and that's kind of a question we can answer a little bit later on the special teams. But with Dustin Brown, I mean, he led the team in scoring this year, and it's hard to expect a little bit more out of Dustin Brown with the age he's getting to. He's at the twilight of his career. But, I mean, after leading the team in scoring, you're just kind of hoping to see just a little bit more offense coming off of him right now.
Yeah, I can see where you're going at there. And I think my disappointment was, you know, I mean, he's gotten a little bit of lackluster of a shot because they sent him down. But mine was Vilardi and the fact that I just thought the fact that he with playing 3C, you know, and you know, we don't wish injury upon anybody, but getting that opportunity to play 3C with Byfield having that injury in the preseason and being able to take that time and really go at it. And I know the Corsi wasn't there, as Joe alluded to earlier with the Kachev and Elias Anderson line. But I really thought that there was going to be something there, more consistent scoring, utilizing that shot, getting power play time. And maybe he just really hasn't. He didn't get enough seasoning in Ontario. With him being the first wave of prospects to come up, there was a lot of urge for him to play right away when our team was faltering so bad, and maybe that was not to his benefit with coming off that back. So that's really I really was hoping that he would take that step forward this season, you know, being on the power play and taking that 3C role. And then, as Joe alluded to as well, moving to wing when Byfield was ready to play. So kind of having that transition. And so maybe he's taking a different route to that by going down to the rain and doing that this year. And we'll see if he gets that time as the season's gone on, or maybe this is just his path. And, you know, progression isn't always linear. And so I think that he still has a good chance to be a top six winger in this league. I really like his play in Ontario. He's been one of my favorite players to watch this year on a consistent basis, just for my expectations of what I thought in how he was going to be used, and him setting and getting sent down so quickly. It's just been kind of a disappointment on a personal level for that one.
Can I ask you guys a question? And I'll open this up. And one of these guys is probably going to be Russell that jumps in here, because I know we talked about so much about Vladimir Kachev at the start of the season, had the good preseason. And I hesitate to say that he's a needs improvement or disappointment, because, and I don't know what you guys' opinions are, because I'm not even sure what I know mine is. Are we disappointed that he's in Ontario for virtually all season because of his play? Or do we think that he just wasn't given a long enough leash to really give a look? Because, man, he's a heck of a freaking playmaker, especially on the power play, which obviously we are all aware the Kings need. I just basically want to throw out, what are your thoughts on Kachev? Is there a disappointment level in Kachev? And if so, is it because of Kachev, or is it because of, was he really not given the chance?
I'll jump in and say, I think he wasn't given the chance. I think there's two issues with that came up with it. One of them is goes back to the Ilya Kovalchuk signing. I think signing a guy and Nikolai Prohorkin as well, you know, signing a guy from the KHL that just doesn't work out. I'm wondering to myself if that was something that kind of weighed on people. You know, we signed another guy from the KHL. We can't move him too fast, or else we're going to have invested too much time in him. But also, you know, with Vilardi not getting the look, you know, and not working on the third line and them having so much chemistry, Elias Anderson kind of being disappointing and being a little behind where we thought he would be. I think that there was this idea that chemistry maybe played a role, and that Kachev couldn't find chemistry with other people because he had it with Vilardi. He had it, and he's showing it down in the rain. I mean, he's got chemistry with Vilardi and a little bit with Anderson. I mean, he can do it. So it may have just been, you know, too quick. That's what I would rule on. Yeah,
four,
exactly.
Games. I mean, four games. I don't know. I don't know.
Russ, isn't a cup of coffee technically five?
Yeah. I mean,
Russell bought his jersey already. So what do you think, man?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's hard because I probably hyped him up a little bit too much, and I have to eat some crow or the Calder, whatever hashtag I created.
Hey, I was waving the flag with you.
But no, but yeah, I mean, because I mean, what you see in the comparisons to Kaprizov, obviously, I didn't ever thought he would be him, but I will say in the first couple of games when I was watching him play, because I was watching him intently, obviously, it was trying to gauge every aspect of his game, And there was a little bit of a lack defensively. I mean, you just kind of noticed it in the defensive zone that he wasn't really on his man. He wasn't really on tight with his man up at the point, because that's really the only place they really ever played him. And so you kind of just saw it. So when I saw him go down, I wasn't really that surprised about it. I just like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. The Kings were losing at the time. Mm-hmm. He had some of the worst analytic metrics on the team, along with Vilardi, and that's kind of why they both got sent down. And yeah, you've seen the flashes in Ontario that we were expecting to see with the Kings, and you're starting to see a little bit of that defensive game starting to improve. He has been healthy scratched a couple of times, so I'm kind of wondering what was going on there. But yeah, I don't know if he just hasn't gotten the opportunity, or I think it is a little bit more on him. I think that's a little bit more of the disappointing part.
And I think right now we're at the point where, honestly, I think he's done. Like, he's not coming up ahead of. There's a laundry list of players in Ontario that are ready to come up and play, whether it's Fagimo, and I know everybody wants Turcotte, and Anderson Dolan has been awesome this season on Terry, just coming off a hat trick. So I don't see Kachev coming up. So I'm just, where does he fit now? Is this it? He's going to spend the season in Ontario, and then he's off to wherever he goes next year. It's just very strange, because he's such a talented player, right? You can see the skill he has, and to get a 4-game look, and then we're wiping our hands with him. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It just kind of sucks to see it kind of evolve the way it has, I guess.
I think it's a little bit, T-Mac likes some of it, sometimes likes some of his guys that you get. And you know, like I'll eat crow on more, like I said earlier, and there's some of those guys that are showing, like Lizotte and Lemieux, who are constantly putting up good numbers and energy. And when, even though in the AHL, Kachev has shown that he's not a liability defensively, as West Coast said, he's a +9 this year. You know, maybe the fact that the Rain are number one on the power play is boosting that numbers, but he's still showing the specialty that he is on the power play, on the 5-on-5 assist. He's been able to score some goals. And I feel like we have a lot of similar guys, Lizotte similar to Moore, like a lot of those guys. And we don't really have a creativity specialist on the power play like you do with Kachev. And instead of like giving that time to evolve and go, like T-Mac was like, nope, he's not like what I'm used to. Like we're losing games. Let's just put this down here. And I have to win, you know? And so it's something that I think it was just kind of like maybe not a panic move, but a panic move from T-Mac starting out the season losing. Hey, these two guys are a reason why. Let's send them down. Let's get new guys in here. We have so many forwards. And
well, then they started winning games. It's working. Like they're obvious. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just from just because of the amount of guys they got. It's tough to see it kind of go the way it has, but. Either way,
I wonder from his perspective if he gives another team a chance in the offseason to earn a spot out of camp, and maybe or what's going to go on there, or go back to Russia. I just wonder what his perspective is going to be on the National Hockey League, because he's played well in the A.
The Kings weren't the only team scouting him. The Kings were scouting him for two years. I mean, this isn't a player that just came over out of nowhere. I mean, other teams are going after him, so it'll be interesting to see if he still has interest or if he does go back overseas.
That's the thing, Russ. Like you brought, they sought him out, and you gave him 4 games. And again, I'm not saying he was great in those 4 games, but if you're going to do that, it seemed very strange to me the way it all developed.
Yeah. And from the source I talked to, that right after he got sent down, and I asked if, hey, is there thought about him going back to the KHL? There was straight away, no way. So, I mean, he's committed to staying over here. Yeah. It seemed at the time. So we'll see if that's changed with how long he's been down in the AHL.
I wonder if it would have been beneficial for him, you know, because we've talked a lot about Vilardi. I wonder if it would have been beneficial for him to maybe have like a third line of Jared Anderson Dolan centering him and Vilardi, you know, maybe finding a different kind of way to utilize him while he's getting used to the American ice. You know, I think Jared Anderson Dolan on the Rain is just – We're backlogged, but like it's a travesty. I've loved Anderson Dolan since the day he came up, but you know you got to find a spot. But yeah, I wonder if that would have changed things for him.
Jeff,
it'll be interesting to see what he believes his talent is, and he's still pretty young, and maybe get another opportunity to go on a team that needs more scoring as well. And that's where we lead into the next problem: is You know, we thought we got brought in these quite a few guys, you know, Arvidsson, Deneau, and they've obviously boosted the chances. Like I said earlier, third in the league in shots on goal and or shot metrics period. But the scoring hasn't really helped. Still bottom third in the league in scoring. So where have the problems been and how do the Kings fix them? Why don't we start with Russell on this?
I mean, the problems are right where they've always been. It's been the shooting percentage. The Kings right now are 30th in the NHL in shooting percentage, with only in front of the Canucks and the Canadiens. And you're not going to win a lot of games if you're getting a lot of shots and they're not going in the back of the net. So and it's the Kings play a really defensive style game, obviously, with the 1-3-1 neutral zone trap, and that's why they're constantly they're high up in the league and on rush chances. So that's been looking pretty good. But when they're in the offensive zone, it just, like we talked about with Kachev, there's just not a lot of creativity. And I'm starting to wonder if there's maybe a lack of a net front presence. I mean, since the Kings have kind of implemented more of this skill type aspect to their game, there's not really that dirty type of 2012 LA Kings hockey that we were used to seeing, going straight to the front of the net. And that's why we saw Dustin Brown score all those goals last year, because that's where all they were from, was like 5 feet from the crease. So maybe there's a lack of a net front presence, that they need to get that Thomas Holmstrom type player in front of the net just to clean up those dirty garbage goals and start getting those higher end shooting chances. But like you mentioned, Randon, they're getting their opportunities. I think they might break the record for in franchise for shots per game. So you just have to start scoring.
Go ahead, he's completely right, Russ. It's a shooting percentage. They're one of the worst in the league. And when you look at the power play shooting percentage, that's also third worst in the league. So it's very tough, because when you're looking at it from a coaching standpoint, you're trying to do your job to put your team in the best positions to win, right? And when you look at the Kings, they dominate possession. They're one of the better expected goals teams at 5-on-5. So they're doing a lot of things really well this year. But they're not going in the net. They're not finishing. Their shooting percentages continues to be bad. But it's not as if it's a high danger thing either. I think they're in the upper half of the league in high danger percentage too. So it's not as if they're not getting high quality chances. They're just not scoring goals. And it's such a difficult thing to try to pinpoint, because you've seen a guy like Kempe who has taken off this year. Look at Iafallo. He's having a really good year. But on the flip side of it, Dustin Brown is having a little bit of a down year. It's been a strange season, right? I mean, if Trevor Moore's been hot of late. They just haven't found that, I guess, that consistency to help them, that elite scorer, to help them both at 5-on-5 and on special teams, frankly. Their power play, listen, I love Alex Iafallo. I don't know that I think power play, first unit power play, when I think Alex Iafallo. And obviously we've talked about Dustin Brown at length and the struggles he's had on the power play. And when you've got two of those guys on the power play right now on the main unit, that's a problem. It's not, those aren't goal scorers. Dustin Brown at this point of his career, and Alex Iafallo, he's having a huge year for him right now. And he's been great, but in fairness to McClellan, who's going in those roles? So Dustin Brown has, I think, 106 minutes on the power play, if I'm not mistaken, 112 minutes on the power, something along those lines. It's not like Kaliev's not playing. He's got almost 100 minutes on the power play himself this season. So who is McClellan? It's easy to say, take out Dustin Brown and put in insert player name here. Who is it? It's not as if the Kings are scoring. Who on the Kings are scoring? I mean, are you actually putting Trevor Moore out there? You're actually putting Athanasiou out there on the park? So I don't know. It seems to be a problem that the Kings have had for years. I don't know what the actual answer is. I'll be honest. I know I'm just kind of rambling at this point. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest. I look at it as the Kings are doing a lot of good things. They're creating chances. They're dominating possession. The pucks aren't going in right now. I tend to be a believer of puck luck, and that it all of a sudden it kind of finds its way back to even by the end of the season. So I guess we'll see.
I sit on the same train with Puck Luck. I mean, as the it's like for me literally every year it's like hooray, it's the new year, happy new year, the Kings aren't going to score because that's January. Like that's how January goes. You know, one of the comments here popped up that it, you know, Dustin Brown has 6 goals on 117 shot attempts, and I think the important stat there that is almost missed is that, or 177 shot attempts. That's 177 shot attempts. That's not even on shots, and that's right. The problem. You know, we talked about high danger chances. Like, you know, the Kings' high danger chances for in the deep analytics is only 53.6%. They're just above, you know, the other team. They're giving away just as much as they're getting. You know, I think it starts on the wing. You know, we've talked a lot about wingers. Like this has to come from the wings. We got to find speedy wingers who know how to finish. Kempe woke up on, you know, the first day of training camp and said, apparently said, I'm going to score 20 goals this year, and he's getting there. But we need more guys like that. We need guys who are getting into the dirty areas, who are fighting for possession, who are fighting for those open spaces where they can take shots. If they're not shooting, then they're not scoring. And, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, let's get 40 shots on net. You know, obviously UC Saros isn't going to play for every team, you know, and, you know, to eventually score, you have to keep shooting. You got to find the way to build that confidence in your shot so that you know what you can do with the puck. Not everybody takes their first shot and scores, but you know, if you take enough of them, you should. And that's where I think we lack the ability to find people who are going to keep taking shots and keep looking for those opportunities so that they can get better. We just keep kind of falling back on players like Dustin Brown and Anze Kopitar who know how to score, but you know, they're 37 and 34 respectively.
Yeah, I think maybe it comes for me is that the same style, there's a lot of similar style of player throughout the whole team. And when you only have, two or three now certified shooters in Kempe, Arvidsson, and Kaliev, and Kaliev is only getting 12 minutes a night, you're getting a lot of guys who are going to create chances because of their speed, their consistent defensive game, and the style of play like Russell alluded to. And then if we're going to be playing the style where we're chucking a bunch of punks at the net, then we got to have that net foot presence. I agree with Russell on that. Like you can't have, oh, we're going to go to skill and we're just going to shoot, but we don't have finishers. Let's just shoot a lot with no finishers. But if we're going to shoot a lot, then let's have that, that net foot presence. And when you look at that Lazat Lemieux line, you know, you have Kaliev whose shot percentage is right around 6%, but both Lazat and Lemieux who are cleaning up a lot of those goals, who are not afraid to go to the net, you know, shooting percentages over 10 for both of them. They're near the top of the team. And so that line complements each other really well. And so I think you're seeing that maybe with the second line as well, right? Deneau and Moore have had a lot of success being around the net front, and Arvidsson's will shoot it from anywhere on the ice, on the bench, in the locker room. He doesn't have a shot that he doesn't like. And I think that type of line balance is what's helping some of those lines being productive in scoring goals, and maybe having too many players in that same mold is hurting the Kings 5-on-5. And the power play is obviously another way to score, and we'll get to that later. Russell, you went like this. Do you have something to add on?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Lemieux because he actually leads the team in shooting percentage at 5-on-5. So I mean, and that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that they need that net front presence, that those dirty type of goals, because those are what go in. And we've seen Arthur Kaliev shot, obviously, but he has a lower shooting percentage. I mean, so it's maybe there's that, like you mentioned, and I talked about, there's that lack of a net front presence that they need to start scoring more dirty goals. But it's funny when Joe mentioned, it's like, you don't know what to do. It's kind of hard to see. I mean, you can't really teach that as a coach. And it's so funny because Todd McClellan said that same exact thing. It's like, you don't really... It's something you can't teach. This like actual scoring is something you can't teach. But yeah, but you can go out and get somebody that can do that, like a Philip Forsberg or a Patrick Laine, those pure goal scorers. I mean, you can definitely go find those players. So, and that's what we've seen with the Kings, is they never really have got those players. So if you're going to keep having those Iafallos, those Deneaus, those Trevor Moores that are going to bring that energy every shift and put those pucks on the net, but they're not really those finishers. This is what we're going to see for the time being.
Yeah,
I think they've been a team that again, I don't think it's a situation where they're just throwing aimlessly at the net. They continue to be – they've created the third most, I think, high-danger chances in the NHL mm-hmm. this year. So they're creating high-quality chances too.
Yeah, yeah. And then Victor Arvidsson is putting up some of his the most high-danger chances of his career. So the opportunities are there. So that's yeah. That's the good thing.
Yes.
All right, let's see if we we had a question up here I had pegged. Let's see. Boom, boom, boom. It was with on the line. I forget where it was at, but maybe it was too far up. But the question was with the Byfield line. So now that they had it started off with Grundstrom, now you have Athanasiou and Brown. Do you like that line combination with Byfield? Do you like the chemistry there, or do you think that they're missing something? And maybe put Grundstrom back in for AA, or how do you guys feel about that line combination there?
I've been on it for a couple of weeks. It's I love the man, but it's time to bench Dustin Brown for a little while. I think you'll find if we were to make that line maybe Byfield, surrounded by Athanasiou and Grundstrom, you'd see a lot of creativity, a lot of speed, and a lot of ability to finish. I mean, Byfield. I mean, he's going to be a star. So putting guys around him who one Athanasiou, who is a well-rounded presence. He's fast. He's got, he's got a good shot. And Grundstrom, who really needs a kick in the pants from time to time to get him going, to learn what's best for him. I think it'd be a fantastic line. And you could honestly cycle through Grundstrom, Kupari, and Brown on a regular basis. I mean, Dustin Brown can still throw the body. And when you got that big game where he needs to throw a hit or two, put him in. But that's where I think we got to.
Well, I agree with Kiffin and the Dustin Brown thing. It's just the way I look at it is it's not going to happen, right? So I'm trying. I think it's probably true, and I think it's probably fair. I agree. I just don't think that that's the direction the Kings are going to go with Dustin Brown at this point. So I would say I think Grundstrom is – I don't know that Grundstrom's the guy to have on that line. I'd like to see somebody with a little bit more skill. I'm going to make the call for Velarde. I think that he's a guy that can play on that line. Would I prefer it to be like Velarde and Athanasiou or Velarde and Kupari? Sure. But again, Dustin Brown's going to be here until he's not. And so I'm just penciling him in. And as much as I think that, yeah, it may be past the time, I just don't see the Kings doing that to the player. So I think it's going to be Dustin Brown and X. And who is that other guy? And I think you're going to see them try a bunch of different guys from Athanasiou to Grundstrom. I would like to see Velarde at some point bring that skill level, that creativity to the line, especially with Byfield. They played outstanding together in Ontario. So we'll see. That's what I would do. I think Velarde would be my call here early. But as much as I agree with you, Kiffin, on Brown, I just don't know that the Kings are going to go there.
I mean, I don't disagree. He's the captain. Oh, captain, my captain. Yeah. I mean, it's almost impossible to put him on the bench. In an objective world, that would be where I would go. Yep. But I do agree with you. And in reality, we're waiting to see whether he retires or not at the end of the year. That's how it goes.
And Joe and I have been hitting on it a couple times. You know, as much as we have all these guys and they've had their moments this season, whether it be Athanasiou or X player that's on the 1 year deal. They might have to trade away some guys and just get whatever picks they can get to create room for some of these guys to come in and see how this roster evolves. I don't know if they will do that or they'll throw some extra players in if we try to bring, a Chychrun or a rental in, see how that comes in. But if everybody's healthy, there's not enough spots. And right now they have all these guys on the taxi squad because they're on the road. But when they're back home, they usually even lower the taxi squad even more. And so then where do those players go? So it's going to be something that's interesting. Let's move on to the defense. Defensive strengths here. So while the scoring's been a little rough, still the Kings in goals against are top 10 in the league. The penalty kill has been atrocious, but overall not a bad year for the defense, considering they've had 12 different defensemen play at least one game this season. Russ, I'll let you start this one off since you didn't get to answer that last question. What have you seen from the defense? What have you liked? And then how do you think it evolves as the season goes on?
I think the defense has been really good this year. I mean, especially with almost the revolving door that's been going on throughout the blue line. I mean, at the beginning of the year, you had Sean Walker who goes down, and you lose Alex Edler, who was actually putting up some of the best Corsi numbers in the league, who was being really surprising. He goes down, And then now the last against Pittsburgh, you put in Moriarty, and then it was a strand right out of nowhere. So, I mean, to see that the numbers that they're still putting up consistently, and I think you have to be, and this is kind of where we go back to Tobias Bjornfoot, Joe. It's like, yeah, he's not really seen too much, but he's being okay. He's doing good for now. Yep. He's doing good for now. He's doing what he needs to. Mikey Anderson has had his off days. Now he's on IR. Hopefully he's not out too long. I mean, it's really just been kind of one-on-one defending with him. It seems like he's on a highlight reel getting postered by who knows who every game. But, I mean, you're kind of liking what you're seeing. And I think a lot of it has to do with the reemergence that we've seen from Drew Doughty and the way that he's been able to put everything, the weight on his shoulders this last year. And we saw a little bit last year. So it was unfortunate when he went down. But now since he's been back, he's been amazing. So if he can continue, I think the defense will continue to be strong as well.
Go ahead, Kevin.
So, I mean, my biggest thing with the defense is suppression. Watching teams try to cross the blue line and into the King zone has been insanely fun, to be honest. What, you know, I mean, we're stopping them at the blue line. There's a lot of dump and chase happening. I stick on Matt Roy for defense. You know, I've loved Roy since he came into the league. You know, his Corsi percentage is fantastic. You know, it's as far as the Kings go. I mean, it could be better, obviously, but you know, as far as the Kings go, it could be great. And like looking into his like sort of adjusted stats over 82, one of the things that I see the most as a defenseman for a guy that I wouldn't have expected because he's so stay at home is goals created. You know, he's at the top level of that he has been in his career. His career obviously not being that long, but you know, he's really putting in the work. He's you know, making his pairing work really well. And, you know, when it was him and Edler as well, I mean, that was a great pair. And watching the Kings sort of become this 200-foot team that's really rolling through lines and creating situations where they can take the puck back in their offensive zone rather than get shots against. Obviously, teams are still shooting, but you know they're starting to grab this identity where it's like you can break through the line. The blue line is really hard to get through, but if you do get through, we're just going to take it away from you. You know, we're just going to come right up on you and take it. I think that's been the biggest strength this year. I've really enjoyed watching our defense play as hard as they do.
I couldn't agree with Kevin more on Matt Roy, by the way. I just did a piece on him. And as of that piece, he led the Kings in primary assists. So as for somebody that's not an offensive defenseman, quote unquote, he's really good in transition, breaking pucks out, making that first pass. I think that's part of it, that he's been the stalwart. Like you look at the guys that have been in and out of the lineup, some significant injuries to Edler, Doughty, and Walker throughout the season. And he has kind of calmly just been the stable, the rock there on the back end that I think has really helped all season with these guys. And we've had young guys come in. So I think it's a combination of, you know, Matt Roy, Drew Doughty's kind of, when he has been healthy, he's been great. And it speaks to the depth. I mean, you alluded to it, Randy. We've had so many guys that have played, but, you know, there haven't been too many guys that have missed a beat. Moriarty's only played a couple of games, and look what he did against Pittsburgh. That pass, the couple of passes he made, I mean, he's been pretty steady Eddie in Ontario, and he's showing that he can do that at the NHL. So I think it speaks to the depth too. It's been kind of defense by committee at times, but it's been good.
Yeah, I want to give a little shout out. I'm with West Coast Bias on here. I think the addition, you can't sing this guy's praises enough. Phil Deneau, shoring up that center position in the 2C. Absolutely. You have Iofalo, who's defensively sound. You have Kempe, who's defensively sound. You know, obviously, Kopitar has been known to have a few good defensive games or two in his career. And so, like, when you're doing that, and then I think the emergence of Lizotte and Lemieux, that tandem on the fourth line, they just wreck people as far as lifting sticks, all this kind of stuff like that. I think it's an understatement what Lemieux brings to the energy of this team, being able to stand up for his teammates, allowing players to be more aggressive throughout the neutral zone, knowing that you have a guy that's going to back you up if you get hung out or you hang somebody out on a big hit. And so I really like the fourth line is doing a great job of creating opportunities. You know, that mosquito in a dark tent, like they said last year with Lizotte and everything like that. So, I mean, he's really risen above, maybe an honorable mention above what I thought he would be. I was a big Jad supporter to start the season, and he's done well in Ontario. But that fourth line, and I talked about it as maybe a negative for the scoring, but it's definitely been a positive on the defensive side, that every single line that we have now has somebody who forecheck, somebody who, you know, all those kind of thing, the defensive stuff that you like to see chases pucks. And so, you know, when do we teeter that to maybe get more offense is what we see. I don't know, but this season, Kings hockey, they're gonna have to win a lot of 3-2 games, and that's gonna be from not only the solid play from the defenseman, but being solid up the middle and having those puck chasers on almost every single line.
I think a lot of it too. What we've seen is that we've seen the team start to buy into this 1-3-1 system, and that their ability to suppress that neutral zone and to create more opportunities and throw more pucks on the net, that's going to lead to better defensive game, and hopefully those goals will start happening more.
Yeah, totally, absolutely.
Well, maybe they can get goals from the special teams here, but they've been not so special this year. Not so special teams. So, you know, not only are we pretty bad on the penalty kill, we are very bad on the power play. I know a lot of fans on Twitter and everything like that, and even in this chat, you know, have said that there really hasn't been much, you know, mixing of the lines other than when people have gone out for COVID or for injury, and they keep throwing the same thing out. And what did Einstein say? Like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And so, you know, what do we see now? And I think it's a good opportunity with the quote unquote Olympic break to maybe see some changes. Let's see what we have from Joe. Where do you think you could talk either power play, penalty kill, and maybe what would you fix? How would you rotate some things around and kind of get one of these units back on track?
So I think the biggest thing with the issue with the Kings right now is scoring goals. So we'll talk about the power play. I guess I'll preface this by saying, listen, special teams, they can be streaky, right? So they could be going through a spot where right now it's not going so well. And by the end of the season, they could end up being in like the, you know, 22%, which is probably going to find themselves in the at least upper half of the league. So, and again, you're still scoring at less than a quarter clip. So it's going to seem bad more often than not, because if you go 1-for-5 on a power play, it's only 20%, remember. So you have to keep that in mind and look at this with a little bit of context. That said, the Kings have not been very good on the power play this year. But what's even more frustrating is the Kings have had only one team has had more power play time than the Kings. So the Kings are spending a lot of time on the power play, and they're not scoring on the power play. Their shooting percentage is third worst in the NHL on the power play. And as I kind of alluded to earlier, I agree, like, the power play is a struggle right now, but what can we do with the players that are on the roster? Let's be realistic right now, right? With the guys that are on the roster. I mean, I guess you could move Brown, and maybe at this point, maybe it's time to move Brown. And do you move Byfield down there, right? To that low spot where he's played some in Ontario, he's played in that spot. So maybe that's a move that they could do. But Byfield, remember, just got here. So it's not like that's been a solution all season. So I still wonder that. I think it's more of a personnel thing, in that I don't know who are the goal scorers. Who's your pure goal scorer? Who's your creative players? Who's your guy in front of the net, in the net front, that's gonna do that? Obviously, Brown, where he excelled in the past, it's not happening this year. So I think given the roster right now, I would like to see Byfield get a little bit more of a role. I've talked about Velarde, but he's not here right now. So I don't know how realistic it is to talk about him. So I think it's a personnel, and then they're just lacking some pure goal-scoring talent, creative talent, if you will. But that said, I don't know what you replace it with, at least what's on the roster right now.
I mean, I'll go next after that. I don't think you can do anything about the power play with the players you have on the roster. That's the unfortunate thing, but hope the other team doesn't score a shorthanded goal. That's really all you can do if you're the Kings. I mean, yeah, you mentioned, Joe, they don't have that scoring talent to help them out with. You look at Vladimir Kachev. He had 2 power play assists in his first game. Then he gets sent down. Look what happened to the power play. Gabe Velarde, I think, had a power play goal. So, I'm not expecting much out of the power play. I just don't want the other team to score, really. That's all we're expecting. I mean, and unfortunately, it seems like that's happened more than we wanted to. But, I mean, so I look more at the penalty kill, and that's kind of where I'm a little bit more disappointed, because, I mean, these are the type of players that should be good on the penalty kill. You look at Hayafal. You look at Deneau. You look at Kempe, who's a rangy player, and a Kopitar, who's been kind of disappointing on the penalty kill. So people want to talk about Marco Sturm. I get it. He was here last year. Their penalty kill was actually pretty good. I think it was 83%. But, I mean, this year you're looking at one of the worst penalty kills since, like, 1987. So, I mean, it's been tough to watch if you're a Kings fan, because there's really not much you can do. Maybe is it a system thing? Maybe I've noticed they have, if you notice, they have the point man who's always kind of roving around. It's not really more like a box. It's more like the point man's always kind of roving around the top of the blue line. So maybe that's a different, something they need to change. And it, like you mentioned, Joe, it'll be something that they look into probably with the upcoming Olympic break or All-Star break now. So hopefully that's something they can look and hopefully improve on. So the second half of the season, because it's hurting. They're a good 5-on-5 team and they're giving up a lot of power play goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought up the structure there, because the structure is definitely something that I've been seeing as problematic for the team. The power play structure is just not there. You've got the Rover, you've got all that, but it seems like a lot of the guys are just standing still. You know, they're standing still waiting for the puck to come to them. And it's like, once I get the puck, I'll start maneuvering. But you got to keep movement in the power play. You know, you have to be able to move yourself and the puck at the same time. Not everybody gets to be Alex Ovechkin. So I think it, more movement. I will say, however, I also agree with Russell there on the penalty kill. I mean, that matters so much more to me. Watching the Kings win the Stanley Cup in 2012. I don't actually remember a game where they had a power play goal other than game 6, the final. I think our power play percentage had to be like 0.4% or something. But throughout that season, though, our penalty kill was way above league average. We were 5 whole percentage points above league average. You know, so at the same while I believe there's a way to win through the penalty kill or through the power play, I mean, the penalty kill is what matters more. If you're not letting in goals, you're not going to win. You're not going to lose games. You're not going to score if you're not going to win if you don't score, but you're not going to lose if you don't let them in. So,
for whatever it's worth, the Kings have. The old adage is your goaltender is your best penalty killer. And that's, I get it, but there's times where they don't have a shot, right? If we're being honest. But for whatever it's worth, Kings have the fourth worst save percentage on the penalty kill this year. And what's interesting is, their per money puck, their goal save above expected when they are down 5-on-4. That's the majority of, that's not all, but that's the majority of your power play times 5-on-4, penalty kill times 5-on-4. Both goaltenders, for as good as they've been this year, are in the bottom 15 in goal save above the expected on the penalty kill. Again, not saying it's their fault necessarily, but that's a statistic that's tracked, that's goal save above expected, and they're two of the bottom 15 goaltenders in the NHL. So for as good as the goaltending has been, is it fair to question the goaltending on the penalty kill? Maybe. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I just thought it was interesting.
I definitely kind of disagree on that. You know, okay. Looking at the penalty kill very specifically, if you look at the New Jersey game on this road trip, on Bratt's second goal, I mean, the passing from the Devils just complete. I mean, they were breaking ankles out there. You know, Cal had no chance to stop that goal. So I the goaltender is your best penalty killer, but I think that we're having some structural issues that are leading to an inability for them to make the saves that they should. And you know, you got a guy sitting out there all by his lonesome on one side of the net when everybody is over off to the other side. You're probably going to get an open net chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Ranford said it in an interview earlier this year that the defense and the goalie are one unit, and that's how they try to teach it with the Kings. And so, you know, they need to get in better positions if the defense is making plays and not allowing those shots and allowing the goaltender to see and, you know, clearing out that net front presence. You could do a lot of help with that. And I think with the way this team is built, and we're drafting all the skill and everything like that. But right now, this team, we're not playing those players. All those players are on the rain, and they're the leading the league in power play down there. And so the way this team is built, I think Russell's right that the penalty kill needs to be more effective for the Kings to continue winning the season. They're going to be winning a lot of 3-2 games. And if you give up some bad special teams goals, that's only going to make it harder for us if the scoring doesn't increase. As far as the power play goes, I mean, Brown seems like the easy one to take off. I wouldn't mind seeing Lemieux on the power play down by the net front presence. He seems pretty nasty down there, able to clean up a lot of the goals. And maybe just having that guy screening more shots, being more active down there, could be something that you could see generate that. It has done that for the Rain. Joe and I talked about Jad being that in the beginning of the season, that guy down low and having a little bit of scoring touch, not being afraid to get in front of the goal. And he's done a good job at that. And they've moved him around as the years went on, but that's where he started down there on the power play. Byfield had played down low and he played the bumper role as well. He's got a pretty decent shot. And then when you're also 6'5 playing the bumper, you're still in a lot of lanes there as well, being that kind of tip man, the high tip man. So there's a couple things maybe they could try with personnel to get something invigorated. I personally have liked the power play two more than the power play one as the season has gone on, especially on this road trip. And so, you know, we'll see how that works out. I think the only thing you could do would be to shuffle personnel within the groupings, maybe give another guy a shot outside of roster movement, like bringing guys up and everything like that. I think the way the Kings win is what we've all agreed upon is going to be the penalty kill stepping up to a higher level, a more consistent level, and not allowing those shots because of how this roster is constructed.
I really like the aspect of having Brendan Lemieux on the power play. We've always heard that comparison to Sean Avery, and teams were using Sean Avery on the power play. I mean, look what he did to Martin Brodeur that one time. So I mean, that's exactly what he can do. I mean, obviously it's illegal now, but yeah, I mean, there's a reason his shooting percentage is so high. It's because he's getting to those dirty areas and putting those garbage pucks in the net. So that's a good idea. I like that.
All right, let's go. Let's switch it up to the trade deadline here. So obviously the big name on the block is Jacob Chychrun. But there's other aspects there. Do you think that the Kings are going to be buyers, sellers? Are they going to stand pat outside of Jacob Chychrun? Because we could talk about that for an hour. Is there anybody that you could see bringing in or moves that you see being made for this year? You want to start it off, Kiff?
Yeah. So let's take Chychrun off. He becomes an off-season acquisition. Fine. I guess we can wait on that. My target, the Kings are buyers. Absolutely. If we're chugging along the way we are now, you know, I brought it up a couple days ago about the points percentage. You know, the points percentage only gets you so far. Eventually, everyone's going to have even games. We're going to have points, and I think you're going to see the Kings getting points, and they're going to be ahead. I think my quick targets would be Riley Smith first. Vegas is going to hit a really serious cap crunch that they're probably not going to be able to Kucherov. So, you know, they're going to have to get rid of somebody. Smith and Marty are the only people. I really don't see us taking Martinez back, even though he is a left shot D, I'd like to mention. But, you know, I could see getting Smith for cheap. He's on an expiring contract. His cap hit's about $5 million, you know, but at the same time, you know, again, you could lose him at the end of the year. Another guy that we might want to target that the Kings could target, I think, if he was available, would be Brendan Gallagher from Montreal. I think someone wrote about that. Brendan Gallagher would be an interesting player to see on the Kings. You know, with maybe dropping him in that third line role, you know, rolling him with Byfield and Athanasiou, I think would be really kind of interesting. But yeah, definitely buy at the deadline. This is it. I mean, I didn't think we'd be here necessarily this year, but I mean, this is it. We got to go. It's time.
What do you think, Russ?
Ooh, I want to steer clear away from Brendan Gallagher. That's a no for me. I mean, $6.5 million for like the next 6 years. That's a hefty price, but yeah, I mean, Jacob Chychrun's the name on the board. Everyone wants a target. I totally agree. He's to fit right in with what the Kings need. I think he's more of an off-season addition. I think it's something the Coyotes have no real rush to do this. I mean, he has a no movement clause that doesn't kick in for like, I think another 2 or 3 years. So there's still an opportunity to trade him. I think that trade will come around the draft, maybe find something around there. But I mean, I think right now the Kings, yeah, they're buyers. I would agree with that, but they're not going after those big fish out there. They're not going to go after those John Klingbergs or even like a Ben Sherrod if he requires a first round pick. So, I mean, if you look back and you kind of – the Kings are kind of around the same timeline they were when they got up to 2012 in terms of how they're building the team. I mean, we haven't seen that big Mike Richards trade where they do trade prospects like Shen and Simmons to bring in a big-name player. We haven't seen that yet, so we're still waiting for that to happen. But so I look back at 2010, at the trade deadline where they were still building, they traded for players Frederick Modine and Jeff Halpern. So I think those are the same type of players you might see the Kings looking for, those like – depth pieces, those middle six, maybe bottom six type players that can play the penalty kill, improve on that, or even that big kind of defensive type defenseman. Because, I mean, right now the Kings really, yeah, they could use offense, but I don't really think those offensive defensemen are really out there right now. Shane Gostisbehere's name's been floated around. I mean, Riley Smith would be great as a middle six forward on the Kings, but I just don't envision the Golden Knights trading him to a Pacific Division rival. I mean, so, yeah, I could definitely see the Kings being buyers, but I don't see them spending their first-round pick or a big Nate Chip prospect come trade deadline. So expect like a middle-name player, I mean, that'll bring some good depth to the team, maybe some good offense, hopefully coming into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm going to say they'd be very – it's probably kind of what Russ is saying, very cautious buyers. So I don't want to see them kind of go after those rental types. I just don't think it's necessary. Like Kiff alluded to, like we didn't expect them necessarily to be here. And if they are going to keep chugging along like this, but that said, don't get too far ahead. Like we didn't expect this. So let's just stay the course right now and not go too crazy at the deadline. I would like to see somebody with terms, obviously somebody like Chychrun, but if he's going to be an offseason thing, I have no problem standing pat. None. And this may sound crazy, I have no problem selling. And what I mean by that is you could look at a player like an Athanasiou or a Grundstrom or a Moore or some of these guys that could probably fill bottom six roles on legitimate cup contenders, which if we're being honest, I don't think the Kings are quite there yet. But what that allows you to do is backfill with some of these young players. And it's at some point it has to be time to either incorporate these young players and get them more ice time or trade them. So there's a significant amount of players right now on both the NHL and AHL. So I wouldn't mind actually selling off a couple of pieces, but you could argue that they're not going to lose anything. Right? Like, are they going to lose that? Is the difference that drastic between a month and a half of more Athanasiou? And I'm just throwing some names out here. Grundstrom versus Vilardi, Turcotte, Fagimo. Like, if you were to replace them with those three, or Jod for that matter, like, I don't think you're losing much, but you're going to get these other guys some much more NHL experience, give them a long run, and maybe even part of it a playoff series. If the Kings do make the playoffs, you can still have those guys then get playoff experience. I actually prefer that. Is maybe that sounds crazy to some people, but I'd kind of rather that. I know like stockpiling assets isn't necessarily something the Kings need to do right now, but I would rather that than see them buy, unless they're buying that Chychrun piece with term, then I'm all in on that guy. If you have a young forward with term, if you have that young left shot D with term, I'm in. Otherwise, I'd be very careful and either maybe sell a piece or two or even stand pat. I'm okay with that too. I don't want to waste assets for the sake of maybe making a round or two run this year when it may not be our year quite yet. Like the window for a cup could open like next year, right? I don't think it's this season. I think they get in the playoffs this season. That's a huge win. It's I didn't necessarily expect it, but for next season, that's when we look to make that move if we can't make it in the offseason. So that's kind of how I would approach it. Be very, very cautious, and I wouldn't hate the idea of if that term guy isn't there, selling and bringing some of the Vilardis, Jods, Fagimos, Turcotts up and getting them an extended look.
Yeah, I think Joe and I agree. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum after our podcast about different opportunities there. And I think with the logjam, you look at how the season started with the protocols and all the uncertainty of what the season was going to be like and injuries. And we needed the bodies that we had to be an effective team. Now with the protocols lessening, I mean, obviously that's not for sure for how long, because we all know that this hasn't been anything but expected. But maybe now that the protocols are lightening up, all this kind of stuff like that, maybe you start selling away some of these pieces, like you said, an Athanasiou, you know, a Grundstrom, Elias Anderson, if he's healthy, to a team that maybe needs, you know, Elias Anderson could be a bottom line player on a team because he has that grit. Grundstrom shown he can do that. Athanasiou has been a guy that's been on multiple teams and can show scoring touch when he's on the ice. Get those assets. We've seen in the offseason, in the draft this last year, they moved up more than once to get quality over quantity in the picks. You could also use those picks to buy said Jacob Chychrun, right? You're just creating more assets to use that. And, you know, not saying that these guys would fetch a second or a third rounder or whatever, but they might, you know, if teams are desperate and cap strapped and everything like that, because the Kings could still eat some of their cap since they're 1 year deals, and do those situations. But, you know, like, you know, West Coast said, or a couple of people said, and what we'd like to see is we'd like to see a couple of these guys like Kachev, like Vilardi, et cetera, maybe push the offensive needle a little bit towards the end of the year, playoff experience more than getting a guy that's going to be gone next year anyways on our lineup, and see what that leads to. Because I think ultimately, eventually you're going to have to be a mama bird and kick these guys out of the nest and see what they can. And you're never going to do that with the logjam they have. And I think they went into the season with the logjam because of the fact that there was so much uncertainty of how the season would end out. You have so many guys that are in similar talent levels, like Moore and Grunstrom and all these guys. So who rises to the occasion, who falls down, you know, how many players you actually going to need? Is there going to be a taxi squad? Is there not going to be a taxi squad? All these kind of things that come in, you know, into the stratosphere of what a team could be. I think that might be the best aspect, is to kind of trade away, open up some room, open up some breathing room for the team, and see what these prospects can do.
Well, take the Riley Smith, like Kiff said. I think Riley Smith would be a really interesting player. But so what does he cost? And what is he just adding to the blockage of guys? That is it better to get Riley Smith for a push, or is it better to get, like, looking a little bit more longer term, to get somebody like a Vilardi or a Turcotte or a Fagimo that ice time, or a Kupari that ice time? That's more of a hypothetical, but it's not, because you know my opinion. I just said I'd rather the younger guys, because I don't think the Kings are cup contenders this year. So that's why I don't know that I would go that route personally. But I think at some point something's going to have to give here with the amount of players, both in the NHL and the AHL.
Yeah. So I think the Riley Smith idea in my mind was very much what you were saying. Like, I didn't really elaborate on it very much, Joe, but, like, you know, the idea being that Vegas was one I was looking at, because they have to shed salary cap.
Yes.
I mean, they've got like 28% of the salary cap in three players. So they have to get rid of Smith anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You know, they have to get rid of players anyway. So basically what you do is not necessarily try to fleece them, but, you know, maybe say, okay, well, we'll take Smith, you know, and for that, we, you know, we'll give you like a fourth round pick, mm-hmm. but you take Athanasiou and give us a third. You know what I mean? Gotcha. So like, you're kind of doing the even trade. We let Athanasiou go. We know we're not going to re-sign Riley Smith at that point. He's 30 years old right now, you know, and you just kind of let it go. But then you have that extra pick to either make a pick. You know, we just mm-hmm. saw a comment that said get another third round pick for one of the best goalies in the draft, or you add that as part of the Chychrun package or the Sherratt package or whatever we decide to do. Or the Carson Soucy package, because I was all in for that. Whoever wrote that was awesome. Like, I was like, oh man.
Yeah, I mean, maybe have the Kings already made their biggest deadline acquisition in adding Quentin Byfield to the roster?
I mean, Gabe Vilardi.
Bring up Gabe Vilardi. Yeah, so maybe I kind of agree with Joe. I mean, yeah, you can add, but why don't we haven't seen Andreas Athanasiou in the lineup that often? Maybe float his name out there and see. Maybe there is that desperate team that'll pay. His contract's not that expensive. I think it's only 3.5 mil. And now with the
valuable bottom six guy and a contender, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, and if the Kings are still contending too, you want to keep him around. So, I mean, it's kind of like you got to balance a little bit, because just hard right now for the Kings. There's still 17 games till the deadline, so there's still some time to go.
It's tough. That's a really good point. It's really tough to sell to the fan base selling when you're in, like, I fully acknowledge that, right? But I guess I would just end this with, I'm of the belief that if you can strike gold on a big defenseman, do it. Otherwise, I think we have an entire crop of forwards that I don't think you need to go shopping for a forward. I mean, and I would rather see them give the looks to Vilardi, Turcotte, Kupari, Fagimo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're going to make a trade, be it on the blue line.
All right, so let's go into our last topic here. We're at an hour and a half pushing. Appreciate you guys in the chat, keeping it lively in there. We love seeing you guys conversating there. Let's go with standings and season predictions. Obviously, any way you chop it right now, outside the scores of tonight being Tuesday, the Kings are in third place, either by points or points percentage. You know, so where did think the Kings would be coming into the season? Is this right where you guys expected? And then, you know, outside of some major acquisition like a Chychrun or whoever, where do you think the Kings reasonably end up? Kiffin, why don't you start this one off?
So coming in, bubble team. You know, wild card, absolutely. I knew that things were in place. You know, the system was working. The draft picks were coming in. You know, and we have more skill in our pool than a lot of other people. So we were going to get to a wild card. Now that I've seen the team and I've seen the character and the identity, third place. We're third place in the division, and my overall how the regular season ends up, we end up in the playoffs, third place, and we probably get bounced out in the first round. Russell brought up, you know, the build up to 2012. The first one was the first issue, or the first year was 2010, and we got bounced out in the first round. So, you know, it's follow the pattern. So that's kind of where I think third place, and we're out in the first. But I'm happy with that. I agree. I'm happy with that. It's the right way to go.
Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I think if the Kings are kind of just contending toward the end of the season, since it's more of a longer season now, and we've started to see improvement from the middle veterans, from Kempe, Iafallo, Matt Roy, and we're starting to see some young players added to the lineup, I think you have to be kind of happy with the way the Kings season's going so far. I had them pegged as a wild card team, and I think that's kind of where they're going to end up at. And if you look at the standings right now, I mean, there's going to be four teams that make the playoffs from the Central. That's obvious. I mean, you have Colorado, Nashville, the Wild, and the Blues. Those teams are going to make it. And then in the Pacific Division, I think the top three are pretty much already set. I think you're looking at Vegas. I think you're looking at Calgary. And I think Edmonton will put itself together and make it in there. So the Kings really only have to beat out the Ducks, the Sharks, and probably looking at the Stars, or maybe the Jets make a run. So there's an opportunity here for the Kings. I mean, if you only have to beat out the Ducks, who are kind of an up and down team, really young, and then the Stars, who are trying to figure out if they're sellers or not at the trade deadline, and the Sharks are kind of still rebuilding. I think there's a good opportunity for the Kings to grab a spot and just kind of just put their foot in the door for the playoffs. If they get swept or lose 4-1 in the first round, I mean, yeah, that'll be a little disheartening, but I mean, at least they made it and they made some improvements this year, and you're happy with it.
Yeah, I think I'm right along with what Russ is saying. Like I did not think this was a playoff team. I thought they'd be in contention, right? I thought they would be, but I thought the Central was so strong that they would have had to crack the top three of the Pacific. And I just didn't think that they were quite ready to catch a Calgary or an Edmonton. And as Russ is alluding to, I still kind of think that those two are probably favorites for 2-3 right now, but the Kings are you know, going to keep themselves in the hunt at least. But I think they're catching a break with some of the Central teams being a little bit down, and the Kings are very much in this. So I would say I am very pleasantly surprised with where they are right now. Will they make it? Listen, I tend to be a buyer in when it comes to possession statistics and expected goals, and they are in the top 10 across the board and sometimes higher, particularly when you're looking at the last couple of months of the season. So it's hard to say that this team isn't legit and isn't for real in terms of being a playoff team. So I think they can squeak in, whether they can hold on to one of those top, you know, the second or third spot in the division. We'll see. Those Canadian teams have a lot of games in hand, which could make things tough, or playing a lot of games in a short amount of time isn't necessarily a good thing either. So that could work out against them. But I think that they are at very least have established themselves as a team that's a legitimate playoff contender, which I wasn't sure if they were coming into the season.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna round this one out. I think I'm gonna go a little bit more optimistic on this one, and my reason is this: I think you see a progression from Byfield as the season goes along. I think the numbers being more of a consistent defensively team 5-on-5 is going to work in our benefit. You see, Russell said we have probably the best goalie tandem in the Pacific. I think we probably get in as that 3 seed. Now, who's going to be that 2? Is it going to be the Ducks, Edmonton, or Calgary? None of those teams really scare me from a definitive point of, hey, we're for sure getting swept, or we're for sure 4-1. And so I think that they have an opportunity to win one round this season if there's some jumps on some players on the team, if the goaltending improves from Cal Peterson. So there's a lot of ifs in my prediction, but I don't think it's impossible, depending on the matchup, that we don't win a series this year. Obviously, if we get a good big trade piece, that could change that. Obviously, those teams could get big trade pieces as well. So, you know, we're going to see how after the deadline comes in. But, you know, I don't foresee that there's not a chance that we don't win a series. And I like the fact the way our team's built defensively, Corsi 4 style of play. I don't think that goes as hot and cold as you may seem. We're already shooting like crap. We're already having bad special teams. And so if those improve, Quentin Byfield improves his play as he's getting more and more time. And maybe we see another youngster come up like a Velarde come in and get us some more scoring. I don't see a reason why not we couldn't beat one of those three teams that I mentioned, whether it's Ducks or Calgary or Edmonton as the two seed and beat them in the first round. It might be a tight series, but I don't see a reason why we couldn't. They don't scare me that much. So I'm going to say finishing around third and getting that upset in the first round and getting some more playoff hockey.
Yeah, I think just overall, you just have to be happy if you're a Kings fan because yes, you're starting to see that next core start to develop right now. And then, I mean, transport me to 5 years from now when we see Brandt Clark and Martin Kromiak and Arthur Kaliev and Quentin Byfield fully developed, man, because, man, I mean, there's talent coming. Brandt Clark just looks amazing. So I'm really happy as a Kings fan with the way that this season's going so far. And I think you're starting to see the team play well with the players that you're expecting to play well. And with the talent that's coming in, as maybe we see Brock Faber make a crack lineup. Look at what Jordan Spence doing in Ontario. You guys are talking about him on the Make It a Rain podcast. So, and then with Brandt Clark coming in next year, watch out. Kings are coming.
They're deep on that right side. So, man, what episode. Hey, fans, thank you for coming in. As always, this is Hockey Royalty. You can find all of our articles at hockeyroyalty.com. We have merch now, so go ahead. Joe, if you want to show the T-shirt there, you got the hockey sticks merch. We're going to be sporting some of those. Sweet jersey by Kiffin there. Every week, we also have the Making It Rain podcast with Joe where we talk about all the rain stuff. We are going to be doing a midway point season podcast this week, so double up, guys. Come on in. And talk some rain with us on Thursday, right, Joe's when we're doing that one?
You got it.
All right, we're doing it on Thursday there. So come in, get your questions ready. Kiffin, where can they find you on Twitter, my man?
I'm on Twitter at McGinnis Teaches, I believe. Yeah, McGinnis Teaches.
Yeah. And Russell, where can they find you, my man?
Find me at NHL Russell.
Go ahead, Joe.
At JW Paterino.
And I'm at Rando Commando 24. Thanks again, guys, for coming in. All of our podcasts are right where you find all your podcasts. And we're going to be doing these live YouTube stuff more often. We love hearing from you guys. If you guys got any questions, please hit us up on Twitter. And we love throwing you guys in the chat and seeing everything there. And as always, go Kings, go.
Thanks, everybody.
Go Kings. Thanks, everybody, for hopping in. Yeah, appreciate it.